Welcome to an encore episode of Words and Pictures, the show about the narrative arts. I'm S.W. Conser. This week, we're spotlighting two of Portland's most admired independent animation directors and bringing you a vintage interview from April of 2009. Joanna Priestley is a filmmaker, teacher, producer, and festival organizer. She's best known for her abstract animation, most notably for North of Blue, which was named Best Feature Film at the 2018 Los Angeles Animation Festival. Joan Gratz is best known for her short films made with clay painting, including the Academy Award-winning Mona Lisa Descending a Staircase. She's also created animated commercials for United Airlines and Coca-Cola, and worked on multiple projects for Will Vinton Studios and Leica Animation. And now, Joanna Priestley and Joan Gratz, recorded at the Western Warehouse in Portland, April 2009. You're listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Conser, and I'm visiting animators Joanna Priestley and Joan Gratz today, and we're talking about contemporary animation about language. And Joanna, you've had retrospectives of your own work, and you are noted for arranging a number of screenings around town for getting the word about animation to wide audiences. Is it tricky to get the word out about animation in this society as opposed to, say, other countries in Europe where animated shorts are a staple on TV?
Well, I think there's a greater tradition in other countries of including animation in the art world. Like in France, there's a museum solely devoted to animation. And here it's been a little bit slow to catch up. So maybe it is a little bit more difficult, but people love animation, so you know it's not difficult to get an audience for a screening of cartoons. I've been curating programs, you know, for 20 years, and I'm happy to say, like, PICA, the Portland Institute of Contemporary Art, commissioned me to do an animation and experimental film program, like, very early on, because they recognized how important it is in the art world. So that was called Stretch Your Head.
There's something about animation that seems to connect directly with the human brain that doesn't go through the abstraction of written language.
Well, there's character animation is often built around iconographic images. And I think when you show an iconic film, children can understand what it means. You know, people of any age can understand what it means. People of all different cultures can understand what it means. It's like those little symbols on the restroom doors in the airport. You know, people know what that means. And icons in animation, I think, can work the same way. And there's very often animation without language, like I've done abstract films that are very, very popular that show all around the world because all different kinds of cultures can connect with that imagery. You know, animation is really interesting because it combines all the art forms. It combines painting and sculpture and drawing and printmaking, and it also combines that with science. You know, you have to understand the physics of how things move. And it includes, you know, choreography and music and sound. So it's a synthesis of all those things. And one really amazing thing is that it goes into all different kinds of fields. There's animation in medicine. People are building animated models of gene sequences or of molecules. And it also goes into like theatrical performance. There's a whole component of animation now of installation that we're seeing in outdoors and also in art museums.
And you started the first major animation society in Portland, ASIFA Northwest. Tell us a little bit about ASIFA.
Marilyn Zornato and I founded ASIFA Northwest, you know, a long time ago now. And that's a very important international organization that publishes a journal that's in three languages. And it's created sort of an international community. It's a way for people locally, like in Oregon, to get together and see new work, to get together and party. So it's a really important organization so people know what's going on. And it's fun to get together and talk to other people doing independent film.
We're talking with Joanna Priestley and Joan Gratz. And your style, Joan Gratz, is
It's what's called clay painting.
Right.
Well, let's see if we can describe clay painting to our listeners, because in Portland, clay animation, model animation is very popular, but this is a two-dimensional as opposed to a three-dimensional way of animating.
Right. So basically, I'm working with oil-based plasticine thinned down, and I'm basically painting with my fingers. In this new film, I'm combining it with Photoshop and After Effects, so it has a different look to it. So it's not just clay painting.
It's really a painstaking process because it's tricky to find out where you're going from frame to frame on the platen.
Yeah, well, that's the part that I really enjoy, is not knowing where I'm going. So it can be very much like an improvisation. And that's the part I enjoy, is not knowing where it's going and, you know, trying to get it in the right direction when it needs to become more realistic. Recently, I was in Iran, and I taught groups of their graduate students to do clay painting in probably 4 hours of workshop. So maybe there'll be a big influx of clay painting from Iran.
Now, how long were you in Iran, and what did you think of the artistic culture there?
I was there for 3 weeks, and about a week of that was in Tehran, and probably about 5 days of that was involved with the festival. But because I was busy teaching, I didn't have too much of a chance to see the films there, but some of their students sent me their DVDs, so I'll look at those and take a look. But the students seem very well-versed with Western European animators.
How did you find the atmosphere in your classes?
Well, the students seem very open, and it was both men and women in my class. And I showed them one of my films, Creation, which was by James Weldon Johnson, and it's about the creation of the world from sort of the black creationist point of view. And they really seemed to connect with it. I was surprised that they would find that particular film so enjoyable.
Your short piece, Mona Lisa Descending a Staircase, was a sensation on the festival circuit. And this was a very impressive walk through the history of Western art of the last couple of centuries. And it had an undertone that was helped along by some really great sound design by Lance Limbacher and Shel White.
And Jamie Haggerty.
Yeah. So tell us about the thought that went into Mona Lisa Descending a Staircase.
Well, originally, when I got a small grant to do it, I was going to do the whole history of 20th century painting, and then I realized I needed to limit it to the face in 20th century painting, and then further limit it to the major styles. So it was really a process of trying to limit things, and yet because I had to spend so much time with each of the artists and really learn their style, I wanted to pick people that I really liked.
The film starts out seemingly in a lighthearted vein, and eventually the history of the paintings starts to reveal some darkness.
Yeah, I didn't particularly feel that way about it. I mean, I started off with the Impressionists, and then during the German Expressionists, it was a darker period. And then some of the people like Francis Bacon certainly have a dark edge to them. But there wasn't a conscious attempt to go from light to dark or anything like that. I was really just following the particular history of 20th century painting. And then, of course, toward the end, there's fewer styles. It's not as clear in terms of art movements. And especially since I was trying to keep it to the face so that I wasn't covering the abstract expressionists or, you know, any of the other more abstract movements.
it's interesting that you're also a children's book author.
Ah, well, I'm an unpublished children's book author, and then I did publish, I must say self-publish, a book of yoga humor, which was really more of an adult book, but I think it had a pretty good audience among children because it's animals doing yoga, and then it's sort of jokes about yoga, which generally doesn't have much of a humorous application anywhere. But yeah, it was really fun doing the book.
I didn't even recognize your style when I saw some of the animals in the yoga poses.
Oh yeah, it's a totally different style, and it was so much different, you know, drawing. And I used it partly as a way of familiarizing myself with Photoshop and being able to get something to the printer that was created partly by hand and then just occasionally digitally.
So how have the digital art applications altered your work?
Well, I think they've altered it the most in this recent film. And normally before in clay painting, if I were to do anything like a zoom in or have one character move across another character or across a background, it was incredibly difficult. But then if you're working on layers in After Effects or Photoshop, it becomes a very easy process. So it sort of opened up a lot of the tools that weren't available to me before. So the things that it can't do as well as it doesn't incorporate the elements as well as if you're working on one canvas and everything's just transforming out of that same canvas. So it has a slightly different look, but for me it was a really interesting process.
You've won just about every award a filmmaker could hope for, and you've been wooed by such giants in the commercial fields as Coke and Microsoft and United Airlines. And have you ever had friends tell you, come out to L.A. and New York and leave Portland? You could just rule the world if you're out here with the big agencies?
You know, I think that really hasn't mattered at all, that the agencies, both when I was working at Will Vinton and then later Leica, who were representing me, that the agencies, you know, come to a particular director. And so it doesn't matter if that director is in Colorado or New York or LA, you know, especially now that it's so easy to send DVDs to people. And, you know, it's a much, in some ways, smaller world than it used to be, or a more accessible world. So I don't think being in a bigger market would make any difference at all.
You're listening to an encore episode of Words and Pictures, featuring celebrated animation directors Joanna Priestley and Joan Gratz. We spoke in April of 2009 at the Western Warehouse in Northwest Portland, a traditional studio space for dozens of independent filmmakers over the decades.
The two of you have collaborated on a couple of short films. One of them was called Pro and Con, and what was unique about this was that elements of the film were actually fashioned by convicts.
Yes. We got access to this amazing collection of weapons that were confiscated from inmates. And they let us use the weapons in the film, so all the knives and I forget, shivs that were in there, were actually made by inmates. And then also within that collection were pieces of craft work that inmates had done, because I guess it's illegal for them to do crafts at the Oregon State Penitentiary. So some of those showed up in the film too.
How did you get across the sense of this creativity coming out in the face of this confinement?
Well, my section was based on the words of an inmate and basically just reflected his ideas and situation in prison. So he wasn't involved in any creative processes other than selling drugs within the prison, which landed him in the intensive management unit. But he's since returned to society, and when I last heard from him, he was selling used cars. So I assume he's doing well.
We didn't know very much about the prison system in Oregon. So the first thing that we did was set up tours to as many facilities as we could. And then we sent out interviews to, like, what do you think, Joan, about 400 inmates? And we got a surprising number of those questionnaires back. And some people wrote long, long essays about their experience. So we learned a lot about the prison system from that as well.
Do you feel that Portland is supportive of women artists?
You know, I don't see the difference. I don't think gender has really entered into it. Talent, what you do is sort of what is the major factor in terms of what happens.
Joanna, I'd like to know whether you agree with Joan that gender tends not to be an issue.
You know, it's really not an issue in the independent animation community. I think there are people in the animation industry who would say that it is an impediment there. You don't see women directing at Pixar, for example, or at DreamWorks, or at Disney. So I definitely think there's a problem there. And I'm hoping to see soon a woman's name show up on a Pixar feature.
Well, you see more and more independent animators and artists who get exposure through the web, for example, and get picked up by major studios. So here's hoping that'll happen.
Well, we're in a really interesting time. I love Pez's films. And they are released right away on YouTube. So as soon as he has a new film, you can see it on YouTube. And then he goes on from there to distribute on the festival circuit. And so, you know, I'm really considering that because it's a great way to get your work out there and get, you know, lots of people to see it. Unfortunately, there's no money in that, but, you know, there's really not much money in independent animation at all anymore. We used to get money from selling to the Festival of Animation and the Tournée of Animation, but that's kind of gone.
And the government grants are all over the world. Government grants have gone by the wayside, but especially in the U.S.
Well, I have to say that we are very, very lucky in Oregon, and particularly in the Tri-County area around here, because we have the Regional Arts and Culture Council, and they give away a lot of money to support artists and filmmakers and to animators. I got a fellowship from them last year, and out of that year-long fellowship, which is not connected to a particular project, but it gave me so much freedom to just experiment, I ended up making three films. The one that I just finished, Mistakes, but also the one about Pluto, and then another new abstract film. So I'm super grateful to RAC for that kind of support, and I've really recommended that to new filmmakers and, you know, to any filmmaker that they apply to the Regional Arts and Culture Council. Because the money's there, they just need to apply for it.
So having worked with so many young animators, if any young animators are listening to the radio show, what's your first bit of advice for them to get out there and hone their craft?
Well, if somebody's just starting out, I would say, first of all, to take a class in animation at the Northwest Film Center. And start experimenting and do a film. It's very important to finish a project and do something really short, like do a minute-long film or a two-minute-long film, because you'll get it done faster, you won't get discouraged, and it'll cost you less money. And from there, then you can apply for grants. You need a finished project to apply for money. So from there, you can get funding for your next film. So, you know, that's how I got started, and that's one way.
Tell us about some of your influences. You studied under the UPA animation studio legend and one-time Disney animator, Jules Engel.
I did. I was very fortunate. And I was just recently, this past weekend in Los Angeles, it's the centenary of his birth. And they did a program down there as a tribute to him to raise money for the CalArts Experimental Film Scholarships.
He founded the experimental department at CalArts, if I recall.
He did. He founded it and he ran it for like 40 years. And that in turn has put his influence out around the world, because a lot of people running other schools are from that department. And a lot of the names, like John Lasseter, went to CalArts, and Mark Osborne, the director of Kung Fu Panda, went to CalArts. You know, Jules's influence went far and wide.
And you've been influenced by abstract animators such as Len Lai, and this influence shows in your work very strongly.
Oh, I love Len Lai's work. But I'd say the most important influence on my work was Norman McLaren. When I was here in Oregon in high school, the Multnomah County Library had a lot of films by Norman McLaren. So I was able to see his work when I was 14, 15, 16, and that's why I decided to become, you know, a filmmaker in animation. And he was very eclectic. He did a lot of different techniques, a lot of different styles. He incorporated words in some of his work. So, you know, I've made 20 films now. I'm working on two more, and they are all in different techniques, and lots of them have different styles, all influenced by McLaren.
You've been known to change styles radically from short to short. You've done some shorts on commission for Sesame Street, and then others have been much more bold, much more brave. You did a piece about menopause, for example.
You know, I don't know, bold and brave, I don't know about that, but I did a film called Streetcar Named Perspire about menopause because it was such an incredibly important event in my life. It took like 12 years to go through the process, and I really knew nothing about it at the beginning, so I kind of wanted to make something funny to introduce people to what this big old transformational process is all about. And in fact, when I was working on it, Lance Limbacher did this fabulous soundtrack for the film, and he said that he really learned a lot about menopause, and I just thought that was the highest compliment, you know. And his wife was going through it at the time, so it's nice.
Yeah, Lance Limbacher has been a longtime collaborator, music composer, and you've also brought any number of assistants and collaborators into your work. Charles Raywald helped construct a multi-plane camera, which was part of your film Surface Dive, and it was a marvelous example of 3D animation with abstract sculpted figures, as well as two-dimensional art and other elements. It's very dreamlike.
Charlie Raywald built a multi-plane animation stand for me for Surface Dive because I wanted to combine sculpted figures made out of Magisculpt, which is this two-part epoxy material, with pieces of glass on another layer and then pastel and ink drawings on a third layer. So, you know, I'm very lucky. Charlie was working at the Will Vinton Studio at the time, and I've been very, very lucky to have the Will Vinton Studio and now the Leica Studio and also Bent Image Lab here in Portland. Because when I can't figure out something, there are these geniuses there in these companies that help me figure out stuff. Like in my new film, Mist Aches, I wanted to incorporate text. And my husband, Paul Harrod, who's a director at Bent Image Lab, said, "We have this guy here, and I want you to look at his MySpace page." So I did, and he had this amazing invitation to his show at the Art Institute of Portland on MySpace, and it just was animated text. And I totally fell in love with it, and I asked him if he could do some text for my new film, and he agreed. His name's Brian Kinkley, and I'm going to show Brian's invitation, and then Brian's also working on a new PSA at Bent Image Lab, and I'm going to show that too.
This reminds me that Portland has a reputation for having artists who are generous with their time and talents. You don't find that collaborative atmosphere in every city.
You know, we're really lucky here because I think it started with the Northwest Film Center and also with the film program at Portland State. It just created this animation community and filmmaking community. And people are very, very open and friendly. People share equipment. I've run an apprentice program here since 1987 to help young people learn more about the industry. And I always try to help them get jobs. And many of them have gone on to work at Leica and Will Vinton Studio and Bent Image Lab. So, you know, it's a great community. We're very lucky.
Has that had more than just a wonderful social effect, but also a very strong artistic effect?
Yeah, I don't know if it's, I don't think it's affected our art, but I think it's been really great in terms of having a fellow community of animators, and occasionally we will work on other people's projects. And I think just the fact, I mean, Joanne and I are one office apart, and even if we're just working on our own films, it's sort of nice to know that someone else is busily working on something. So it's a very subtle support in a way, but I think it's really nice to feel like you aren't working in a vacuum.
Joanna Priestley and Joan Gratz, thank you so much for joining us on Words and Pictures today.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure.
Pleasure. Thanks for having us.
You've been listening to an encore episode of Words and Pictures, recorded in April of 2009 and featuring award-winning animation directors Joanna Priestley and Joan Gratz. I'm SW Conser. Thanks to all our listeners on the radio dial and on the web. You can find an archived version of the show later today at kboo.fm/wordsandpictures. And be sure to follow us on Twitter, @wordsandpicture.
Flavorful. It doesn't lose its flavor in cooking. He may not be Mr. Bright, but he is certainly Mr. Smooth.
I looked at all the beauty of heaven.
Regular price cards. Appropriate.